Perhaps the best horse that Ryan Moore has ever ridden, the latest in the team tactics saga and the latest news regarding Kempton Park in the short and the long term, plus more about the future governance of British racing, all in this week's edition of The Front Page. Yes, hi there, welcome to this week's edition of The Front Page. I know we say it's a packed programme, but there really is tons to talk about this week, and doing the talking with me, Lee Mottishead, are my sofa friend, Chris Cook, and in Paris, Scott Burton. And we will start with the big race of the weekend. It was the Coral Eclipse at Sandown. It was a race in which Constitution River was trying to assert himself as a genuine superstar three-year-old following his win in a pretty jockey club that left some people really impressed and some people a little bit underwhelmed. But Chris Cook, you were at Sandown on Saturday. Were you really impressed or were you a bit underwhelmed?
No, I'm really impressed. I mean, I don't think he could not be. He's won that race with authority. And we were talking up, you know, one or two of the others in the race as potential threats. From about two furlongs out, you know, there was only going to be one result. The more I've sort of thought about it since, I'm starting to have, you know, doubts and caveats and that kind of thing, because I think he was the only one horse in the race that had already won a Group 1 this year.
Yeah.
So you wonder about the depth. You know, I don't think any of the older horses have won a Group 1 that took part in it. And then they've gone such a lick.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the Pacemaker was like 10.7 seconds through the second furlong.
Should be the July Cup.
I mean, yeah, clearly in the wrong race. And, you know, Hot Mountain and Gethin have ended up being quite close to that pace in the sort of hot early stages. Hot Mountain's run a really big race considering, you know, how close he was to the pace through the first half mile or so. He stayed on well. But what you're seeing from the point where they turn is a bunch of horses that are just slowing down. And it's a case of who can keep going the longest. And that was Constitution River. But, you know, but they're all beginning to run out of puff. And Gethin really hit the wall. He sort of came there, got to the front, looking like a big, impressive beast, new on the Group 1 scene. And then it just, you know, almost as quickly, it was over for him. He got a bit warm in the paddock. He was the one that was on his toes, which I don't think kind of helped him, obviously. And then, as I say, he's raced closer to the pace than ideal. You'd love for that horse to have other days in the future. You know, it'd be great for Owen Burrows to have another good one. And he looks like he should be, you know, a quality animal, but he didn't really show it there. Anyway, so Constitution River ended up winning well, but and he looks again like, you know, like he's got more to offer, like he can win tougher races than this one. The mood from Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore afterwards, you know, they were in high spirits. It felt very much as though they know they've got a good horse here.
Well, and Scott, they also voiced it in the pieces that Chris and Catherine McRae wrote on Saturday. You guys both referenced this line that Ryan Moore had said to Aidan O'Brien that he probably hadn't ridden a better horse, and then Aidan referenced it to the media and then questioned whether he should have referenced it to the media, but he did. And we, I'm sure, all very grateful that he did. How much do you set by that, Scott, that Ryan seemingly said to Aidan, I might not have ridden a better horse?
I think we have to take it pretty seriously, don't we? I mean, he's ridden Art winners and Japan Cup winners and all the rest of it. He's got a lot of global references to it. It's not just a case of this is the latest one off the Ballydoyle production line. He's a really, really gorgeous looking horse. He's a very impressive horse to look at. Big sort of oil painting almost, really. And he doesn't have a kind of real sort of push button acceleration, but the way he kind of lengthens and stretches, and he was the last one off the bridle. They got racing really, really early, even once Flushing Meadow fell in Arles. And although Ryan said he had to go a little bit earlier, and he wanted to because he was being held in by the white man horse, and he had to go sooner than he wanted, even when he manoeuvred out. He didn't go for everything straight away. And I think it's been pointed out, Sandown is quite a difficult finish to look really, really impressive because of the uphill climb to the line. But he was well on top at the end. You expect, I think these days, we expect a top 3 year old is going to be very, very hard to beat in the Eclipse because they get so much weight for age this early in the season. And we've seen the Jockey Club and then going on to the Eclipse to be the way to do it these days. Verdini did it, and St. Mark's Basilica did it as well. So it's a well-trodden path. I just think he's a very, very good horse, and he got the setup of the race for him, but it was a fast overall time. And, you know, to put in that kind of performance, they were talking about maybe giving him a break after the Jockey Club, and he looked like he'd had a hard race in the Jockey Club. Remember, he was drawn out very, very wide there and had to come all around the houses, even as much as that race was set up with him with Hawk Mountain and Montreal as well. I think there's potentially better to come in him. I feel sure that the race we might see him really, really shine is the Irish Champion. Let's hope they decide to roll the dice and come to York as well, because he'll keep them beating. He'd be a serious threat to Ombudsman, I think.
He would, but to sort of highlight how far he has to go, and Ryan Moore did say he has to go and prove he's as good as I think he is. Ombudsman is a hot favourite for the international. Is not even favourite for that
race. Surprised me. I mean, he's about even money. I think to some extent there's an element of people aren't completely sure that Aidan is going to send him to that race.
Yes.
You know, they're bearing in mind that Aidan's been talking for a while about giving this horse a little break.
Yeah.
He was clear on Saturday that York is still possible, depending on how the horse comes out of this race. I feel like if he was to come out today and say, yeah, we're definitely going to York, you know, we'll be there and we're going to take on Ombudsman and whoever else turns up, at that point he'd go favourite, wouldn't he?
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Would he be your favourite?
I'd have to back him, I think. Yeah,
would you?
I'll tell you another thing that pleased me on Saturday, was just in my mind to get across. You know how Santa's got their lovely pre-parade ring?
Yes.
They all love to go up to up by the Whitbread winner sign. So when I went up there before the Eclipse, the horses that everyone was watching were the three Aidan O'Brien horses. They, you know, they were going around there for a good long time, and then the others did appear. So credit to Aidan and all of the connections for that. But through all of that, you know, it was a hot day. There was every chance to sort of get a bit warm or start misbehaving. And Constitution River could not have been more professional. You know, he was calm throughout, and he's like that in his races. You know, he's a real professional. He's not going to beat himself. You're going to have to beat him on the track by being a better racehorse. And maybe that'll be hard to achieve.
Yeah, but very possibly. As Chris says, Scott, he's a model racehorse. He's gorgeous to look at, amazing temperament, travels like a dream. If he did go to York, ask Chris a question, not necessarily based on the betting, but which of the two horses would you think would win, Ombudsman or Constitution River?
I'd have to be with the 3 year old. I think Constitution River, again, wait for age at that time. It's kind of averaged out, isn't it, across thousands and thousands of performances between 3 year olds and older horses. But when you get a really, really good 3 year old, it's very hard for these older horses to give the weight away. Obviously Ombudsman won what has to be one of the weirdest Jumbo Internationals probably since the first one was run when Roberto managed to beat Brigadier Gerard. But I think when you look at the weights and measures and all the rest of it, Ombudsman he's beaten his own generation and the older generations. He's winning Prince of Wales Estates, which is a very good race, takes some winning. He beat 3 year olds in the international last year, but then when he went to Ascot, he was beaten by Calandagan. He's not impregnable. He's a very, very, very good horse, and it will take a proper one to beat him. But I'd take Constitution River over him.
Well, in a seamless link, Scott, you've referenced Calandagan there. You were at Saint-Cloud yesterday to see the Grand Prix de Saint-Cloud. There were question marks over Calandagan after his dismal effort in dismal ground in the Coronation Cup at Epsom. Could he come back? He came back. How impressed were you?
I was really impressed, actually, because Francis Graffard has spoken beforehand about being drawn 8 of 8 was not going to be helpful to him. And we all kind of thought, well, it's a small field and they've got to go around several bends, and he's not a horse you put in the race very early anyway. But he was a long way out the back. He really was just lobbing round. And when they turned in, he still had a lot to do. And when you look at sectional times, he's come home so fast. It makes you remember he is it's not really a world record because obviously they all get run on different tracks, but he's run faster than any other horse on turf over a mile and a half, which he did in the Japan Cup. He beat Equinox's track record, race record for the Japan Cup last November. And I've spoken to trainers before of good milers, good middle distance horses in Europe who've sent horses to Asia, to Hong Kong and Japan, where they have these tarmac hard tracks, which are quite shallow, and they've got concrete underneath them, as it were. So they lend themselves to faster times. And they've said to me, well, I just don't know that my horse is ever going to be able to go that fast. But Calandagan has gone there and done that. And on what was admittedly very, very quick ground yesterday, I mean, he's come home in 32.67 seconds for the last 3 furlongs. Now, to give you some sort of context to that, it was not a great card around the Grand Prix yesterday. It was maidens and handicaps. But the Kante handicap is obviously full of good handicappers. It'd be sort of a not quite a Bunbury Cup level handicap, but a 50 grand handicap over a mile, not a mile and a half. He's run about 2.5 seconds faster than them for the last three furlongs. He's absolutely lapped his good horses in by Group 1 standards. Qualificar is a good horse. Sunley is obviously progressive as well. Aventure, I don't think she really was in love with the ground, but even so, he's got good horses strung out behind him, and he kind of dosed a bit when he got to the front. But just that time, it just makes you realise he's just such a quick horse, and he can do it over a mile and a half, and he can do it over a mile and a quarter. I think he's right back. He was a bit edgy and sweaty beforehand. It was a very hot day yesterday, but he wasn't just behind the saddle. He was just, on his neck and all the rest of it. And Francis Graffard admitted he was a little bit worried beforehand, and he was a bit edgy, and maybe he hadn't really quite got over the mental disappointment of what happened at Epsom, but everything on the track says he's right back to his best. And there's a week less between the Grand Prix Saint Cloud and the King George this year than there was last year, which makes life a little bit tricky. But assuming he comes out of this well, he's going to go to Ascot. He's going to have Masquerade Bull, who was the horse that pushed him to that world record in Japan. He's potentially going to have his stablemate Goliath, maybe Benvenuto Cellini as well. We're talking about the York matchup between Ombudsman and Constitution River being a great race, but what for those of us that love the mile and a half division and love the King George, that should be a proper bust up.
Yeah, and if you want to know how much Scott does love the mile and a half division, read his column, which is in today's Racing Post, and obviously across our digital platforms. Chris, I asked you a question about head-to-head a second ago. I'll ask you another one now. Calandagan and Masquerade Ball in the King George, which one of those two, or would you expect a 3-year-old, a Benvenuto Cellini, to sweep them both up, maybe?
I'm not completely convinced by Benvenuto against a really top older horse like Calandagan. I think he might be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And just instinctively, I don't feel like I want to get in Calandagan's way, you know?
Yes.
Because then you just feel stupid when he flattens you, which is kind of what you half expected anyway. I'm really looking forward to that as a race. I don't know if it's going to be much of a betting race for me.
Should be fantastic. £2 million as well, prize money this year. Scott, which way would you go? Calandagan or Masquerade Ball? You're a big fan of Japanese racing too?
Masquerade Ball is a proper horse. He needs to grow up a little bit. He kind of wandered around a bit in Japan. He ran a very, very eye-catching comeback race in Hong Kong when he wasn't really put in the race by Christophe Lemaire. So he's going to come primed for the day. But it is just so hard to travel halfway around the world and take in these really top international races. We're used to European horses doing very, very well in the Breeders' Cup, but obviously it's like a little bit like having two separate championships going on. You have the Dirt Championships and the Turf Championships, and obviously our turf horses are quite a lot better than most US turf horses. But when it comes to things like Japan Cups or Japanese runners coming and trying to win the King George or the Arc, it's a really, really hard thing. And I think it's great that they're coming, and he is a proper horse, and he'll be better again over a mile and a half. But Calandagan obviously just about managed to get the better of him in the away leg, as it were, and I expect him to do the double.
Race to look forward to, that one. later on in the show, we will be looking at a big intervention by Goodwood and York in terms of British racing governance, and interesting developments too in terms of the immediate and long-term future of Kempton Park. But before we do that, Aidan O'Brien was talking plenty about Constitution River at Sandown on Saturday after the eclipse. He was also talking, Chris, though, about what had happened during the week, because Christophe Soumillon had his the second half of his appeal against suspension he received, the team tactic suspension he received in the St. James's Palace Stakes. And it resulted in, what would we call it, a partial success for Christophe Soumillon?
That looks like a fudge from the outside, doesn't it? I mean, and we're sort of quite used to getting that sort of result from appeals hearings, and you can see why it happens. You know, when someone like Soumillon comes along and explains himself at length, and, you know, he's so charming, and you know, and he's giving hours and making a serious effort to try and persuade you to see things his way, it's really difficult at the end of sort of 3 or 4 hours to go, well, you know, that's all very interesting, and, you know, you made an interesting case there, but I'm just, you know, you did it and you're stuck with the original penalty.
Because the panel decided that he had advantaged,
he opened up a hole for
Stade, but intention.
Exactly. I mean, and, you know, if the circumstances of this case don't lead to a guilty verdict of team tactics, I'm sort of tempted to ask, what circumstances would we need to get to a ruling that somebody had done that on purpose? Because he does look to the inside, I mean, more than once, I think, you know, as if he were trying to make sure that he knows who's on his inside, and then he comes off the rail. And then there was all this talk about, you know, he's seen some school kids on the inside of that rail when he's walking the track earlier in the day. And so he's worried that, because he expects to be in front of that stage in Puerto Rico, and he's thinking, well, that might be very distracting if my horse sees that. I mean, it's just so completely unconvincing. What's difficult for us talking about this now is that we haven't seen the panel's full reasons for
it. It will come out in the next week or two.
Hopefully this week, you'd like to think, given the importance of the case, maybe next week. So we're working off what's been reported, which is not a huge amount, but what has been reported, as I say, is that Christoph offered this as a reason for why he's come off the inside rail as he goes around that bend. Now, I mean, I've always heard from jockeys that, you know, one of the great things that you're never allowed to happen, is somebody to go up your inner. You know, that's just like a cardinal sin. If it happens to you, you look silly. Peter Scudamore got himself into dreadful trouble years ago for, you know, coming across and barging someone that was trying to go up his inner, and that was just some low-grade handicap hurdle with half a mile to run. You know, the idea that Soumillon's completely happy to come off the rail around the final bend in one of the sport's marquee races, letting someone else up his inner, just so that he can avoid the risk of being distracted by a bunch of school kids who may or may not still be there on the inside, it really stretches credulity. Plus, you know, I was watching the ITV footage last night. On the inside of the inside rail, when they're running that race, there's really nothing. I mean, it's the hurdles track, and it just looks like empty grass. There's a member of ground staff who's standing on the inside of the rail where they straighten up, but the nearest spectator looks like they're about 25 feet away. And they would have known that too, because when they go down to post for the St. James's Palace Stakes, they go down the home straight, go around that bend, and then down the hill to the mile start on the round course. They don't go down the back straight. So, you know, if you're a jockey who's got in your mind, well, I saw some kids here earlier, I'm a bit worried about that, you've got ample time to check out the situation as you're going to the start to see whether or not they're there. And, you know, from the ITV footage, as I say, it looks like there wasn't anyone there that would be worth worrying about. And he doesn't say in the comments that have been reported, the kids were there when we ran the race. He says, I saw them there 3-4 hours earlier when I was walking the course. So it doesn't seem like a great deal to worry about in the context of a Group 1 race that you're really, really, really trying to win.
One thing that another thing I thought was interesting, Chris, is in the comments from the panel immediately after the announcement, there was this paragraph where they say, we consider that absent an intention on the part of Soumillon to benefit his stablemate, this breach should be dealt with as what is in effect a case of interference, significantly aggravated by the fact that it had the consequence of benefiting a stablemate. Now, surely if you're saying that he did this, but he didn't intend to do it. If he didn't intend to do it, surely the fact that he benefited a stablemate is irrelevant anyway. You are the, if you've intended to do it and you benefited a stablemate, then open and shut.
I see the point. Yeah, absolutely.
But if you've not tried to do it, then what difference does it make if you've benefited a stablemate?
Perhaps in their mind, they're thinking, well, if it has the consequence of helping a stablemate, we have to ratchet up the penalty somehow to take account of the fact that people will be suspicious, but we're not persuaded that it was in your mind. I mean, they've shown an awful lot of respect for Sumi, haven't they?
Yeah, after and Rory McNeice as well.
And of course, Rory McNeice always puts up a great show on these occasions. But I can't help, you know, looking at the race itself and thinking, you know, well, look, I think I know what's happened there. And I think, you know, an awful lot of people in the wider racing public would take a lot of persuading that this decision is the correct one. But as I say, we'll get the full reasons in due course, and we'll get to pore over them at that stage.
Scott, what was your initial take on it?
Before the hearings had started, I was relatively concerned or convinced, whichever way you look at it, that it would be a hard thing to prove. There were lots of ways where a good defence team, and Simeon himself, as you say, is pretty eloquent, could point to things like the fact that he was off the rail for most of the way down the side as well. This was obviously the first race of the week that was run on the round course. Everything had been up straight up to this point. And as the week went on, there were lots and lots of occasions where the leaders didn't hug the rail particularly. I'm going to forget the race now. I think it might have been the Ribblesdale where a Gosden favourite got themselves a long way behind and still managed to finish third, coming right out of the rail and not having to weave around anybody. So, I think obviously the stewards didn't know that when they looked at it straight after race number four or five or whatever it was on the actual on the Tuesday of Royal Ascot. So there were always going to be lots of ways they could argue this that would put it under pressure. I think the thing that made me the most convinced that they were going to have to alter their approach was a press huddle which the BHA gave. I think it was the Thursday before the first hearing where Brant Dunshay and a number of other executives put themselves forward for general questioning from the media. They didn't have an announcement to make or anything. And I think most of us assumed that given it's an independent panel, that the BHA wouldn't want to put its finger on the scale and comment about it at all. But Brant Dunshay, the chief executive, obviously his background is in regulation and stewarding. That's what he was came to the BHA to be in charge of from Australia. He's got immense experience in this area. And if I can just read you the quote that he gave in response to, I think the question was put to him by one journalist about whether 8 days was enough. And they talked about the Pat Cosgrave case in Dubai, and he'd had the equivalent of 3 months. And Brant talked about how the penalties are not the same because obviously they race far fewer times in Dubai and in other jurisdictions, Hong Kong and places like that. But he said, is it time to look at this, as in the rule? I think the answer to the question is that we have been, and we've been progressively working on how we improve our processes and our approach to dealing with tactical issues. Now, to me, that reads, as I say, this is a guy who is steeped in regulation and in stewarding. And to me, that reads like somebody who is preparing the ground for the fact that this rule is going to be rewritten sometime in the next 6 months anyway, regardless whether they got a result or not during Soumillon's appeal. Now, how much or little notice of that the independent panel took, I imagine that they judged the case strictly on its merits and didn't think about what the BHA is or isn't intending to do with the rule going forward. But if you go back to the kind of two main pieces of case law in this area in British racing, Shamie Heffernan appealed against a hefty ban for his ride on Ivan Denisovic in the 2006 QE2, where he was deemed to have helped George Washington. And that ended up with a very, very similar scenario where he got done for careless riding. But that's obviously a lesser thing. And within 6 months, the regulator had rewritten the rule. And I think that's the kind of situation we're in now. One final thing. I know I've rambled on about this already quite a long time, but is that one person put it to me that the stewards obviously take quite close interest now whenever Ballydoyle or another organisation runs multiple runners. I don't think any of us were that aware that, for instance, that the stewards are having Aidan in before the Derby to find out how his four horses were going to be ridden. That's information that's come out through this process. And reading back through those two previous cases, the Ivan Denisovich case and the Duke of Marmalade case, which was when Johnny Murtagh got in trouble and Colman Donoghue got in trouble at Newmarket. And that was proven, although largely because Johnny had spoken to the media about it and essentially admitted the breach to a journalist without really intending to. That's the kind of level of proof you need, is actually, you know, kind of wiretap evidence exactly, but you need somebody to come forward and say, I heard jockey A speak to jockey B and say, do this. When you read the reporting of that second case, Aidan O'Brien gave evidence and spoke about how absolutely paranoid he'd become in the wake of the Ivan Denisovich George Washington case. And one quite sensible person put it to me that by having a look at this, by actually charging not Ballydoyle, but by charging Christophe Soumillon in this way, even though they haven't got the case to stick and they are now probably going to look at that rule anyway, maybe that just puts the thought in the mind of not just Aidan, but any trainer who's running multiple horses, you know, be it Wathan or Godolphin or Judmont or anybody like that. We're watching you. You need to be careful.
Chris, you were looking like you were dying to interject.
No, not at all. It was very interesting, but I rail slightly at the idea that this rule needs changing. I mean, as Scott's pointed out, it's a rule that gets into the headlines about once every 10 years, in current form. They don't need to muck about with it every time they lose a case. The rule as it is worded looks fine to me. It so happens that this particular panel, having heard all the evidence, have decided they're not persuaded about intent. I disagree with Scott that, you know, you need the jockey to come out and do a hands-up job before you can convict of intent. You're only having to prove your case if you're the BHA on the balance of probabilities. You only have to persuade a panel that it's more likely than not that a jockey made a manoeuvre with intent to help a stablemate. And you can look at the surrounding circumstances. You know, I think in the normal course of events, you're not going to have an admission, but you can still reach the conclusion, I think, fairly on the available evidence that a jockey has done a certain thing. As I say, on this occasion, for reasons that we're going to find out, they haven't gone along with that. And I find myself surprised, but we have to keep an open mind for the time being.
I was just going to say,
when you consider the amount of stuff that the BHA should be worrying about, I think the team tactics rule is just a million miles down the running order.
Scott, you have a second?
To break in there, but are we not surprised that given the amount of intense video scrutiny there is on all the racing channels on ITV, you know, we have Ruby Walsh sitting in a kind of analysis hub role for ITV. Would we not have expected somebody with riding experience? We've all sat in a lot of BHA hearings, but none of us are top quality riders. Would we not have expected there to have been more play on what Soumillon's doing with the reins in his hands? If you're steering a horse one way or another, there's surely quite a lot of technical evidence. Now, to the best of my knowledge, there wasn't an enormous amount of talk of that in the media beforehand. Nobody's come up with sort of spyglass images zoomed in on what he's doing with his hands or his reins or anything like that. It may well be that Louis Weston put all those questions during the hearing and Soumillon was cross-examined on that. But these are technical issues in the end, aren't they? These are running and riding rules that have or haven't been contravened. And I think kind of the writing was on the wall slightly that no former jockey or anybody has come forward and said, look at what he's doing with his hands, look at what he's doing with his reins. This is a deliberate manoeuvre.
The written reasons are going to be eagerly anticipated.
I think the answer to that is that there hasn't really been much use of expert evidence. in any of these disciplinary hearings over the years. Right. And I mean, it might be a real gap that needs addressing, but it's obviously going to add to the length of these hearings, which is already, you know, quite considerable, plus the expense. I think it would, in the end, it would improve the quality of debate and probably the quality of the decisions.
Okay, well, three stories we want to just canter through now. And they're important stories, though. One of them came out yesterday when Goodwood and York put out an announcement for their blueprint for a new structure for the governance of British racing. It would involve having an independent BHA board. We've heard all about that in the past. Lord Allen certainly did. There would then be three panels reporting into the board, replacing the existing commercial committee, an elite flat panel, a foundation flat panel, and a jumps panel. The Racecourse Association would be, in effect, relegated to the role of a trade body. And the racecourse's membership of the BHA, which currently is all done through the RCA, which has three of the six membership stakes, if you like, in the BHA, they will be split between racecourses in a different way. Scott Burton, did you like what you saw there?
I thought they were really interesting proposals. And I think it's sort of a, not necessarily a natural follow-on. Somebody's thought very hard about exactly how to divide the power in these various panels that would replace the commercial committee. I think it shows, much like Ascot's resignation from the RCA, that these kind of top-level race courses are really trying to think more strategically. They've obviously got a different business model to those tracks that are based around media rights. You know, these are places that sell a lot of hospitality, that are trying to for their top races to attract international runners, international owners. They're trying to become players on the global stage. They will stage a lot of the races that would form part of the package that is being looked at, this idea of Project Pace, I think it is, whereby, you know, the crown jewels of British flat racing get packaged up and sold to private equity, or an investment is made by private equity to inject more money into the sport. These are the tracks, Ascot, York, Goodwood, that are sort of fundamentally involved in those kinds of more strategic projects. And they clearly feel some frustration that the RCA, as it currently works, is a kind of a sort of lowest common denominator organization that has to look after everybody, even though they've got very, very different commercial outlooks. And that is actually stifling any kind of decision making, bold decision making from a chair or a chief executive at the BHA. So I think they're interesting proposals. I don't for a minute imagine that they will end up being adopted 100% or a whole, but they add interesting food for thought. And I thought it was particularly interesting in the statement where they said the window of opportunity to do this is really quite small. Obviously, the RCA, the Racecourse Association, is due to report back quite shortly about its own proposals for governance reform within their organisation. They won't be keen, and the remaining constituent members won't be keen to give up all the power they've got. So as I say, I suspect in the way that Chris talked about the stewarding decision being a bit of a fudge, I expect maybe some of these proposals might go forward. It won't go forward as a whole package. But I thought it was a really interesting way of trying to look at breaking the logjam in decision-making at the top of British racing.
And in terms of the speed at which things will have to move, I'd say Scott Ruff is there that asked, so that Goodwood and York say time is ticking on this one. BHA chair interviews are thought to be taking place this week as well. So it might not be that long before we have a new chair in place.
No, indeed. As you say, the clock is ticking. And historically, it's always been incredibly difficult to get, you know, everyone in racing to agree on change. And I mean, let's say they all managed to get on the same page with regards to, you know, what the new power structure should be and how things should operate in the future. This would be the third shakeup in the space of about 10 years, is it?
Yeah.
And I remember what enthusiasm there was for the tripartite system when that came in. You know, that was supposed to be the thing that was going to, you know, unlock the sport's full potential. So, I mean, I'm very wary about expressing really any kind of enthusiasm for this. It sounds persuasive. And, you know, you can see how it could work. But it's just such a fundamentally difficult thing to do. to put in place any kind of structure that allows all the disparate elements in horse racing to make the correct decisions for the sport going forward. It's just an enormously difficult task, but our inability to get it right is obviously holding us back.
It'd be good to know what the Jockey Club think about this. They obviously weren't involved in this announcement with their fellow allies, large independents Goodwood and York, but arguably the Jockey Club have more pressing things to deal with. Two stories, Chris, that relates to Kempton in the last week. One of them is a very good news story for the Jockey Club in the sense that we've got this Christmas racing revamp whereby there will now be four contiguous days of top quality racing for ITV viewers across Christmas, with the King George Christmas Hurdle taking place on Boxing Day, the Corto Star and Novices Chase now moves to the 27th at Kempton, the Welsh National moves a day later to the 28th, and then you've got the Shallow Hurdle on the Sunday, a move, this whole revamp that's been led by Entain, whose bookmaker sponsor those four-day highlights. So that's been one story related to Kempton, but the other one is that tomorrow we've got a 90-minute debate in Westminster Hall, which will focus on the future of Kempton Park. It's been organised and called by the local MP, Lincoln Jopp, a Conservative MP, who is very fearful for the future of Kempton, who seems to think that Barratt Redrow will put in a planning application this year. Barratt Redrow have said they won't, but they might at some point in the relatively near future. So we know that Kempton's immediate future looks rosy. Long-term, we certainly don't.
No, I think the pressure point seems to be that their option, the house builders, to buy and build on the place is not going to run forever. I think it might only have another couple of years to run.
2028, and there's a two-year potential carryover if they've started the process.
So that's the sort of pinch point that we're running into. You'd like to think that, you know, a place as important and historic as Kempton couldn't possibly come to such a dismal fate. But the Jockey Club seem to have painted themselves into a corner where they no longer have any control over the process. You know, the agreement they signed many years ago commits them to having to put up with whatever happens. Which is just a depressing thing to think about. The revamp of Christmas racing, I mean, when you look at it, you sort of think it makes so much sense. Why hasn't it happened before? You know, why have we got the Welsh Grand National fighting with, you know, day two of Kempton's meeting? We joined up all the various meetings and you've got a sort of really interesting proposition for the British Christmas Racing Festival. The one thing that I wish there was more of was some sign that we're interlinking with what's going on in Ireland, because, you know, obviously Leopardstown has a really important racing festival going on at the same time, involving horses that are going to be coming over here 3 months later and racing in our biggest races. ITV, I think, will be showing at least one race from Leopardstown each day. I wish that could have been reflected in the announcement that we got. We've made Hereford move one of their fixtures from early December to, I think, is it the 27th?
Yeah.
So that ITV have got something else that they can add to their broadcast. And I was wondering why that was necessary, bearing in mind that you have Leopardstown and I think also Limerick showing really quality racing, you know, at the same time. Maybe that would have been something that TV audiences would have been more interested in seeing, you know, those horses that are going to be aimed at the top races a couple of months later. I think we've got to a place now with jump racing where you have to look at it as a sort of British and Irish collective sport. You can't just focus on one island and not the other.
What about France, Scott? Did French racing fans get anything over Christmas of any note whatsoever?
Nothing very, very exciting. If you like trotting, then there's a big meeting at Vincennes with one of the trial races for the Prix de Mérite. But on the jumping and flat front, it's very, very quiet. There's a sort of a rota between the jumps meeting at Pau, Vincennes, and I think it's Deauville, the all-weather flat meeting, as to which one races on the 25th and which set of jockeys and trainers and stable staff have to work on Christmas Day. But it's not quite such a big deal. And it has to also be pointed out that Christmas itself is not quite the all-consuming holiday season here that it is in Britain. I think the thing that struck me most about the announcement about the Welsh Grand National moving back a day is that there was no real concern expressed by either Chepstow or the sponsors or anybody, really. If you go back 20 years, you know, you'd be saying, well, the 27th is sometimes a bank holiday, but it's the next day after Boxing Day. The further away you get from that, the more people are back at work, the more people won't be able to go. But it just seems like the entire country goes on leave for 10 days, 2 weeks now. And so, you know, every day is a holiday.
Well, thankfully, Scott, horse racing and the horse racing media will continue to work across Christmas, won't we, Scott? Chris, to...
Can't avoid it, really.
Of course you can't. There's no.
Such good horses running. Do you know, it's just come into my head, though, that moving Chepstow back by a day might mean we no longer get that hugely unattractive clash between the Welsh National and the Paddy Power Chase at Leopardstown, which is, you know, very similar race, 3 mile handicap chase. You know, if you like one of those races, you like the other. But they're always scheduled within 10 minutes of each other. And, you know, the Welsh Nationals sort of got half a mile to run when they start the Leopardstown race. It drives me mad.
That's been one of your bugbears over a long time.
God, I must have got 5 columns out of it. But, I mean, it's deeply annoying that after all these years, we can't get enough international cooperation to separate those races out a little bit more. And so maybe now there'll be a whole day between them.
Well, let's hope for you that the Welsh National isn't scheduled within 5 minutes of the Savills Chase on the...
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, we don't want that to... But you might get a column out of it.
Well, I mean, there's always that, right? But I mean, surely to goodness that won't happen.
Time will tell. Time will tell as well if the July Cup goes to Ballydoyle or one of the big entities on Saturday. Super Saturday coming up, an amazing weekend of racing at Ascot, York, and of course Newmarket, where the July Festival starts on Thursday, culminates in the July Cup on Saturday. That will be a talking point in next week's edition of The Front Page. This one is now all done and dusted. Thanks to Chris, thanks to Scott, thanks to you for watching, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.